to the Avenging Hour. I'm Jason.
I'm John.
We're back again.
We'll never go away.
Never, ever, ever. I live here now.
Jarvis made up. We have so many spare rooms here in Avenging Hour Mansion.
I don't have a Happy New Year. I don't have a Merry Christmas. We have nothing.
Yeah, it's January. There's nothing going on.
Bleh.
Yeah.
I saw at some point, when was that? Last week? That Jacksonville, Florida was colder than Anchorage, Alaska.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Weird. And I just saw yesterday it snowed in the Sahara Desert.
The world is coming to an end.
It's those, either that or a plane like just dumped a bunch of cocaine.
Either that or it's those kooky weathermen again sent by the...
Oh, the weathermen.
By the weather satellite to cause chaos, and the beast is down trying to steal frozen women in bikinis from the beaches of Rio de Janeiro.
All right, then. Previously on the Avenging Hour, we wrapped up those pesky West Coast storylines dealing with cat sex and demon limbs. Hank Pym basically admitted he wanted to kill himself, and our team foiled a curious heist by Tiger Shark and Whirlwind that may have something to do with this episode. And now, episode 136.
This is what it's all been building towards, Jason. 2.5 years of storylines building towards...
Just to get to this one idea, because we both like this story.
Yeah, that was not well thought out, was it? That was
a waste of time.
That was really, we could have just done this.
We could have just talked about this storyline and moved on. We got two issues today. We will start with issue 273 from November of 1986. Hey, we made it all the way through 1986.
Almost.
I mean, by the end of this episode.
Yes.
Roger Stern and John Buscema are still here. They must be as bored as we are. And this one is called Rites of Conquest. I'd like to say this is the first time we've seen Hercules in a bar, but it's more fun to say we're seeing Hercules at a bar again. It seems, aside from helping his buddy Namor rescue his ex-girlfriend, Hercules would clearly prefer to spend his time on the roster with some distance between himself and the Wasp. Here we see him holding court by taking lame bets from fellow patrons. He's lifting most of the crowd on a giant table, apparently proving he can do so for 5 minutes. But much to his dismay, the table gives way before the Prince of Power. Hercules immediately promises that Stark will pay for any damages, and pretty soon he's pounding drinks and telling stories. This guy at the bar is clearly pushing for information, asking pointed questions about each teammate, but Hercules is too far in his cups to care, until the curious stranger mentions that his boss is a woman. Now Happy Herc has had enough. He tosses the stranger out the window and into the path of a speeding truck. Realizing his error, Hercules bounds outside and stops the truck with his face, completely annihilating the cab and obviously murdering the driver who, oh no wait, he's fine. He was wearing his seatbelt. And Herc promises to have someone pay for those damages as well. But what about that stranger? He seems to be in a hurry to leave. In fact, we see him turn a corner and hop into the back of a waiting van occupied by that new female yellow jacket. He tells her how their plan is moving along perfectly, and as she is calling him ugly, he changes clothes back into the costume of the Wrecker. That's what he's supposed to say.
Dun, dun, dun.
Who? Because we've never seen him.
And who?
You'll find out later. But in case you thought this might be a small-time criminal villain plan thing, let's turn the page and see who else is involved. Here's Moonstone getting word from our other two baddies that the plan is in motion. Hercules is getting plastered. Moonstone says she'll relay the info to the Baron, but Zemo has walked in behind her. He wants to know why she's in the monitor room when she has other work to do. As she leaves, he ponders the fact that she's probably smarter than him and may be difficult to keep in line. And if you notice, there's a new Baron Zemo here. We haven't seen him before yet.
Who?
Yeah, we'll find out about him later, too. With Hercules quickly becoming useless, let's check in with the rest of our team. We see Captain Marvel doing laps around the moon, even diving through it at one point. She decides to stop in Paris for some crepes for breakfast, and soon we're seeing Zemo dwelling on how to neutralize her.
Who?
Yeah, right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we've been there. He finds Moonstone again, who is running some tests on Blackout. Don't, we've seen him. She tells him that she has been able to control his power and offers a demonstration of what the Dark Force can do. The bad guys hear a commotion next door and rush over to investigate. Mr. Hyde,
who?
Is having words with Piledriver.
Who?
And tossing him around like a sack of moldy oats. Moonstone tries to soothe the savage beast, but he won't listen until Zemo clasps his shoulder and orders him to calm down. Moonstone is impressed with Zemo's leadership. She wanders off to finish her work, and we learn that Zemo ordered Piledriver to start the fight, and that Zemo had a drugged needle in his glove that sedated Hyde when he touched him. Sneaky little Zemo. At this point, I will mention that Zemo seems less a leader and more a parlor magician, pulling strings and using tricks to keep his troops in line, but I'll reserve judgment until the plan goes into full effect. In the meantime, let's watch Wasp and Black Knight arrive at the March of Dimes Celebrity Gala. A reporter asks them if it's true that Submariner has quit the team. Our Avengers are stunned. The reporter announces he received an anonymous tip. Before Wasp can stutter out an excuse, she's rescued by Paladin, who sweet-talks the reporter. With Paladin cozying up to Wasp, Black Knight is clearly miffed. Baron Zemo notices this too, watching it all on a ubiquitous wall of monitors. I have no idea where the cameras are.
No.
Doesn't make any sense. Fixer walks in. Oh no, we've seen him. We have seen Fixer.
Yes, we have.
Announcing that he's adjusted Zemo's headband just as he asked. And Zemo commands that everyone meet him in the briefing room. All 14 of the Masters of Evil cram into the room and Zemo unveils their plan. They're basically going to overwhelm the Avengers with numbers, and then take out the Fantastic Four too. Once the heroes are down, nothing can stop the evil. He asks for a Pledge of Allegiance, and Moonstone says, just hold on a second. Why does he get to be leader? Zemo calls on Blackout to contain Moonstone, which he does immediately. She learns that Zemo's headband is now tuned into the same frequency as whatever device she was using to control the crazy person, and, oops, Moonstone has to suck it up and admit fealty. With that out of the way, let's get to the plan. Our last scene of this issue shows Jarvis alone in the monitor room, reading Leave It to Smith by P.J. Wodehouse. He hears an intruder alarm but isn't overly concerned, assuring himself that the Omnium Steel Gate will keep any foes at bay. Seconds later, the gate is down. The lawn defenses are defeated and the front door is bashed in. The wrecking crew is making quick work of the interior defenses as Mr. Hyde makes his way to the monitor room. Jarvis is desperately trying to reach anyone on the communication channels, but he's immediately captured, tied to a chair, and placed atop the meeting table. It appears that Avengers Mansion now belongs to the Masters of Evil. To be continued. Our team this issue is Hercules, Captain Marvel, Wasp, and Black Knight. We see Namor and Captain America in Hercules' flashbacks, but they aren't actually here. Paladin stops by to flirt, Jarvis is taken prisoner, and our villains are the Masters of Evil. In this issue, they are comprised of Baron Zemo, Moonstone, Fixer, Tiger Shark, Mr. Hyde, Blackout, the Wrecking Crew, which is Wrecker, Piledriver, Bulldozer, and Thunderball, Goliath, Titania, Absorbing Man, and the new Yellowjacket. This is our first look at the new Baron Zemo. He is Helmut, son of Heinrich. And he first appeared in Captain America number 168 in December 1973. He's a Nazi in a pink leotard with leopard fur trim and a tiara.
He
sounds really threatening.
He originally appeared as a character called the Phoenix in that episode. It wasn't until issue 275 of Captain America, a decade later, in November of 1982, that he was like, I'm just going to wear my dad's old clothes. They look good.
They're a little tighter.
Well, if you remember the Baron Zemo's hook. His shtick. The first Baron Zemo. Was it the rag that was stuck to his head because of his adhesive X.
His dumb Donald mask was, yes. It was glued to his face.
Exactly. Well, obviously, his son wasn't born with one glued to his face.
Did he do it out of, solidarity, though? He's like, I'm just going to glue this to my head.
No, the first time he fought Captain America and the Falcon as the Phoenix, he was maskless. At the end of the issue, he fell into a vat of adhesive X.
Of course he did.
Now, all
of his clothes are stuck to him.
Right? He didn't have a mask on when he fell. He can take his mask off, but he started wearing the mask because the vat of adhesive X was boiling, and he was scarred so horribly that his face is just a mess
He
now.
Is disfigured, yes.
Yeah, he's horribly disfigured, so that's why he wears the mask. It's not stuck, though. You can take it off.
It's a Doctor Doom thing.
Yeah, but not as cool. I mean, his is lavender. Yeah. He's wearing a purple mask. Doctor Doom is wearing a metal faceplate.
Yes, he has a magenta ski mask on.
Yeah.
With no eye holes.
I don't know how he's not running into things all the time.
It's got to be hot in there.
Yeah, right?
I was hoping that his clothes were completely fused to him because I figured he'd probably smell really bad because he's just constantly urinating on himself.
That would just be great, wouldn't it?
Let's see. Mr. Hyde first appeared in Journey into Mystery number 99. From December of 1963. He is Calvin Zabo, a brilliant biochemist who became obsessed with unleashing the hormonal potential of humans. To fund his research, he used to rob his employers. He tried to get a position with world's greatest job creator, Don Blake, but was spurned and vowed revenge. He created a formula, drank the formula, and, well, you know how the book goes. Mr. Hyde's strength, stamina, and resistance to physical harm are increased. He has fought Thor toe-to-toe. He can tear apart thick metal with his bare hands, and he's just a little bit unstable.
He is one of the most powerful supervillains in the Marvel Universe, and you look at the people he's fought. He's fought Thor, and then Daredevil, Captain America, and the Falcon. It seems like he should be aiming a little higher if he can be taken out by Daredevil or Captain America and the Falcon.
Well, who is he supposed to fight? Like a whole team?
Yes. I mean, he's really tough.
He is, but he's just one guy, and he seems to be like a berserker rage. Like, when he gets going, he's not very smart.
Yeah, well, much like Mr. Hyde himself in the story. You know, we should say something about Baron Zemo. The original Baron Zemo was a scientist and an inventor. The new Baron Zemo is not. He was schooled to be an engineer, this Baron Zemo, his strength seems to lie in his ability to strategize and make plans. You know.
So far.
Well, yeah.
And then finally we have the Wrecking Crew. They first appeared as a group in Defenders number 17 in November 1974. The Wrecker has a magic crowbar that received its power from the Norn Queen when she mistook him for Loki. He had the three other members grasp his tool during a thunderstorm, where it was struck by lightning and gave them all dumb powers. Pile Driver punches things with his oversized fists. Bulldozer rams stuff with his head, and Thunderball has a giant demolition ball on a chain. It's a gimmick team.
So the Wrecker actually existed, as Jason said, for about 6 years before the Wrecking Crew came into existence. He first showed up in Thor 148, January of 1968, and his name is Dirk Garthwaite.
He's a dude with a magic crowbar.
Yeah. There's absolutely nothing interesting about him except for the fact that he was mistaken for Loki because he just mugged Loki.
Oh, sweet.
When Carnilla showed up to give Loki powers and accidentally gave them to the Wrecker instead.
You'd think she could have taken them away by now.
You'd think. The Wrecker is an interesting character in that, why are you sharing your power with these other three bozos? There's no reason to do it. It makes him a little weaker.
Yeah, and by the end of this storyline, he has taken that power. Well, he hasn't taken it back. It's given back to him.
But then he'll share it again.
Of course.
Later on. So it's very odd. And I do want to just say one thing. First of all, out of Piledriver, Bulldozer, and Thunderbolt, Piledriver doesn't actually have oversized fists.
It's not like cartoonish, no.
I was hoping it would be like, and Bulldozer runs into things with his oversized head.
He's got a giant noggin. I think the most interesting of them all is Thunderball, because he's actually a really smart person.
I was just going to say, Thunderball's the only one with a personality. His name's Elliot Franklin, and he is very smart. He is, I believe, a doctor. I think he's got a doctorate in something. He's some sort of scientist.
The other two are just... Durr.
Yeah, he will occasionally try and step out of the lane of super strong flunky and do smarty things with his smarty brains.
Mm.
That's what happens.
That's all I got.
Well, let's go through this.
How do you want to talk about this?
Let's go through the issue and pick out a few things, and then we'll give a big overview at the end.
Okay. I don't really have much to nitpick here because I think a lot of this stuff makes very good sense.
I enjoy...
Hercules is getting drunk. I mean, that makes sense.
I enjoy Yellow Jackets. Yellow Jacket's a great character. We talked about that a little bit, but we didn't get to see a whole ton of her her first appearance.
No, we don't really know a lot about her, which is good, because they can build a whole new thing for her here.
All the men on the Masters of Evil want to hit on her, and she is having none of it. And I like the fact that when the Wrecker's changing in the van with her, and he's like, "Don't you like looking at my kisser?" And her response is, "You use that thing for kissing? You must lead a lonely life, Wrecker." I try to think. I'm like, nice. Sick burn. Yellow Jacket. I enjoy her quite a bit.
He's wearing a pink mask, too. What is it with these?
Purple and the
that
really.
That is a horrible costume, yeah. Zemo. What are you thinking?
Well, and even if Zemo's costume, which is basically purple and yellow, wasn't horrible, then he's got fur on it.
Fur trim on his shoulders and on his boots, and then he's got puffy sleeves. He's like wearing a pirate shirt.
Jerry Seinfeld would not approve.
A magenta pirate shirt.
I do like the fact that Captain Marvel uses her powers to go to Paris for breakfast. If I had Captain Marvel's powers, I'd be going to other countries to eat all the time.
Sure.
If I want, you know, I
Why
want...
Why not? It only takes you a couple seconds to get there.
Right? You want sushi? I'm going to Japan for it. You know, I'm not going down to the local...
It's kind of lonely, though. Like, you can't take anybody with you. She doesn't have one of those powers where she can say, "Hold my hand, I'm going to turn it... I ripped your face off, sorry."
She has no friends. It doesn't matter.
I wonder if she can't even get stuff to go. She can't take it with her.
No, she can't get stuff to go. It is amazing to me when the Black Knight and the Wasp are on the red carpet, they're being interviewed by Entertainment Tonight. It's amazing to me that in 2018, 37 years later, that's not the right math, but basically 37 years after Entertainment Tonight started on the air, it's still on the air.
I believe it's just 30 years.
Oh, yeah, but it's been on the air for 37 years.
No, gotcha.
And I feel bad for Dane Whitman in this issue. He's so excited to have this night with the Wasp, and then the Paladin comes out of nowhere also wearing purple.
Well, Dane's kind of creepy, though, because she's like, "Hey, thanks for coming with me. I'd go anywhere with you."
So I think we can talk about the big plot here, which the big plot here is that Baron Zemo had a really good idea, which should have been obvious to all the villains before and never was, which was there's five members of the Avengers now, but let's call it even six.
Sure.
Normally, if you've got six members of your hero team, your villain gets together a team of bad guys that consists of about the same number of people, usually sure. The exact same, sometimes one more, sometimes one less.
And they wait, and the six of them wait until the six heroes are around and they go, "Let's do this."
And Baron Zemo said, "We're going to divide and conquer, plus six, I can put together 14 people."
And he waited until Namor wasn't around, so now the team's down to 5.
Yep, they're basically outnumbered 3-1, and then he still splits the team up.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really well-thought-out plot, and I don't understand why more villains don't do it. You know, the Fantastic Four's main villain group, main antagonist group, is the Frightful Four.
Right, why aren't they the Frightful 14?
Exactly! It makes no sense at all. And the villains are really the stars of this issue, because we're really spending our time with them, seeing how this is coming together. And most of these villains are idiots.
Yeah, and that's kind of the problem, because you see Zemo has a good plan for how to get at each one of these heroes, split them up, get them off their game. But the people that he has put together, a couple of them are helpful and a bunch of them are just idiots. And you can already see just in this first issue that they're... Some of them, like Zemo and Moonstone, have doubts about each other. Some of the strong guys don't like each other. Like, there's already little fissures.
I don't think that's a problem, because he can control the idiots. Because when I say idiots, we're basically looking at a lot of these characters. If you look at their power set, it's super strength and limited invulnerability.
Right.
And he can control them. They're a little rowdy, but they're not going to be a problem. The problem is Moonstone. And I really enjoy the interplay between the power play going on between Zemo and Moonstone. Both of them want to run the Masters of Evil. Moonstone, we've talked about many times, she's a favorite character of mine because she is smart and she is ambitious.
And she's been in the Masters of Evil before. She was in Egghead's group.
Yeah, she's got seniority.
She does. More so than Zemo. He's just inherited it.
How did he get promoted over her?
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I guess he got his postcard at his post office box. Got invited. I find it interesting that we just kind of come into this too. Like, the Masters of Evil are already a thing.
But we've seen a little bit of this. If we remember back when Yellowjacket, back when the Wasp and Paladin, when they were talking to Yellowjacket and she got broken out of jail by the Grey Gargoyle and
Screaming Mimi.
And that issue, Yellowjacket's like, should I fight or not? And the radio next to her crackles to life. And there's this mysterious voice. And that's Baron Zemo putting together his group.
But we don't see, like, we come into this issue and they're already there. We don't know where they are, or, I mean, we find out over the course of this issue that there's at least 14 of them here. We don't see how he brought them all together.
And there's a good 3/4 of a page panel which shows pretty much all the group together. And I remember when I first read this going, wow, that's a lot of power in that panel.
Yeah, there's a lot of strength there.
I mean, you've got Mr. Hyde, Goliath, the Absorbing Man. Those are three of the strongest bad guys in the Marvel Universe.
Tiger Shark's pretty strong.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not saying the others aren't, but those three, just in terms of sheer muscles and punching power.
Well, yeah, but I mean, on top of those three, you also have Tiger Shark and the entire Wrecking Crew.
Plus, you've got Moonstone, who again gives them a little bit of a diversity in powers. Plus, you have Blackout, which does the same thing. Plus, you've got Fixer, so you've got an inventor type. It's a lot.
It's a lot of power, for sure.
I had also completely forgotten that Zemo's plans went past the Avengers. Spoiler alert, he doesn't kill all the Avengers.
No.
But I like the fact that he was starting with the Avengers because he hates Captain America. But he had no plans to stop there. You know, he had plans to go past them, beat the Fantastic Four next, and keep going from there until they basically, I guess, rule the world?
I don't know. He kind of stopped at Fantastic Four.
He says once that happens, no one will dare to oppose them.
I guess he just takes out those two teams and... did he forget the X-Men? They're a pretty strong team.
No one cares about the X-Men.
Because at any time, there could be 30 of them on a team.
Oh, true. But yeah, no, it's interesting. I really like this
I guess
plan.
He waited till the Defenders were broken up, so he didn't have to worry about them.
Yeah, no one wants to fight the Hulk and Birdnose. Did you have any other comments about the issue in general?
Not off the top of my head.
Do you have bullpen bulletins?
Yes. Jim Shooter provides quick plot summaries of the other 6 New Universe titles. Then he stupidly compares the New Universe to wishing you had kept your copy of Fantastic Four number 1, as if they'll someday be worth the same.
Oh, doesn't he wish.
I actually wrote ha 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 in my notes. Then he announces the New Universe version of the bullpen bulletins will be titled Universe News, because...
That's why people read new comics, right? Is for the editorial page in the middle?
Universe News. Wow, he really... dug deep for something creative to... And that's it. That's Bullpen Bulletins.
Yeah, it's not very interesting because we don't care about the new universe.
No.
Our next podcast will be all about the new universe. Mark's Remarks.
Mark's Remarks offers a column about creating a good villain. He says that a good villain should have clear motivation, an effective power or gimmick, and a good name and costume.
I mean, I think those are all... I'd agree with that.
But a great villain should have all of those things and a complex personality and a good track record.
Well, I guess he means they shouldn't be defeated too many times.
Yeah, but they usually don't really win, so...
And the villains have to... I mean, you have to... The heroes have to defeat... If the heroes never defeat the villains, they're going to start to look pretty ineffectual.
They're not really heroes then at that point.
Yeah, that is their book.
He makes a good point, though, that a villain doesn't need heroes. It only needs victims.
Yeah.
So you can always be a villain. You can't be a hero if you're not helping.
He says that he thinks every hero should have at least 12 villains at any one time in their own villains. 12 of their own villains. So that you can recycle them throughout the course of a year and not be using the same villains all the time.
Did the Avengers... Have we...
They've never had 12 villains.
What issue are we up to? 273? Can I name 12 villains that have stuck around for more than one?
I can name two.
Ultron and Kang. And I guess the Masters of Evil, because we've seen them in different iterations.
We'll name three.
That's about it.
I mean, technically, the Masters of Evil are a lot of different bad guys. But yeah, there's not really much. There's not much the Avengers can claim as their own.
What was that group that had Claw and Manape and...
Oh, the Lethal Legion.
Yeah.
That's four. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Grim Reaper. You could use the Grim Reaper.
He's because done his own thing.
The thing is, most of the villains in both the Masters of Evil and the Lethal Legion aren't the Avengers villains. No. They're villains that they've borrowed from other titles.
Or they're villains that don't really have a home.
So yeah, it's...
Although I feel like most of these villains were Thor villains.
He also says that he asks his writers to come up with a new villain every third storyline so that there's always new blood.
So there's always garbage on the stands.
Any letters that's jumped out at you?
No, not really. There's a couple letters here that could suggest they should keep Namor on the team but get rid of Hercules.
J.A. Barnum of Lawndale, California thinks that the Black Panther, Quicksilver, Banshee, and Moon Knight should form some sort of worldwide anti-terrorist team.
Why those four?
First of all, my thought is that seems awfully kind of prescient for 1986. You know, did we talk a lot about anti-terrorism teams in 1986? But then the
four. Why would he pick those four characters?
Especially since Banshee has never been in the Avengers.
Neither has Moon Knight up till this point.
Well, he's been in here, but he hasn't actually joined them or done anything with them. He came when Moon
Knight. Oh, you mean Banshee's
him.
Never been in
the He's never Avengers even been
comics.
In the title.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an odd. Those four. I mean, you could actually do a relatively interesting book with those four, potentially, maybe.
An international terrorist? Did he think that all four of them are from a different country?
Well, they are. Black Panther is from
Wakanda.
Banshee's from Ireland. Moon Knight's American, and Quicksilver is
transient.
So they are from different countries.
Really.
But
you're not casting a really wide net there.
No, two from Europe, one from America, one from Africa. Anyway, it just was something odd. It just struck me as very odd. Anyway, MVP?
I gave it to absolutely no one.
Yeah, this is not a good issue for the Avengers who don't get to do much. I gave it to Captain Marvel because she gets crepes for breakfast in Paris.
Good for her.
The useless character?
Hercules, because he's just breaking everything.
Yeah, I picked him as well. And you know how they used to give, you know, like Captain America's the first Avenger, Iron Man's the armored Avenger.
Hercules the drunk Avenger?
The alcoholic Avenger. I think we should go with that.
The bankrupting the Avengers Avenger?
Yeah. Don't worry, Stark will pay for it.
We got plenty of money.
Best quote taken out of context?
You use that thing for kissing. That was my best quote. Because if you take it out of context, who knows what you're talking about.
Avengers level threat?
Definitely.
Yeah, I think we're definitely there. What about your final grade?
I gave this issue an A. I said it's like The Empire Strikes Back. Because you know at the end of The Empire Strikes, like nothing has happened, and you're like, oh, geez, what's going to happen next?
Have you given any other issue ever an A?
There have been a couple. I can't remember what the last one was, but I know we both gave it an A.
I gave this one an A as well. This is a storyline that they've been teasing now for a while, and it's finally happening. And I've said before how much I like when plans are well laid out and well, you know, things are done well. And it's not that the Avengers, except for Hercules, it's not that the Avengers are being idiots this issue.
They're just not really there.
They're just not paying attention to what's going on, and they're kind of all wrapped up in their own thing. Before we get to the next issue, really quickly, we need to talk about Amazing Spider-Man number 283. Because in this issue, we see the Absorbing Man and Titania as part of the Masters of Evil, and Zemo sends them away to go do a special mission. That special mission is in Amazing Spider-Man 283, where they go to the airport to pick up a new member of the Masters of Evil.
Do you know who it is? Mongoose.
I was going to say they never get him.
Do you know who Mongoose is?
No.
He was a mongoose that was turned into a person by the High Evolutionary.
Good choice, Zemo.
Mongoose.
Well, in any case, they go to the airport to pick him up, but Spider-Man sees them, and there's a big fight. They win. Like, Spider-Man does not capture them, but they aren't able to make it to the airport to pick up Mongoose. That we'll come back to them next episode. But
yeah, I'm just surprised you talked about that now.
It happens after this issue because this is the issue he sends them away.
But it doesn't really come into effect for like three more issues.
All right, we'll talk about it more later. Never mind. All right, Avengers number 274 is next. This is from December of 1986. We are now officially done with that year. It is by Roger Stern and John Buscema, and it is called Divided We Fall. The cover of this issue promises us the last stand of Hercules. Am I going to get to recap the best issue ever? I just might. The Black Knight is returning to Avengers Mansion, preoccupied and grumpy after getting cock-blocked by Paladin last issue. Unbeknownst to him, the mansion is controlled by the Masters of Evil, and the Fixer and Baron Zemo are watching our hapless hero as he trudges to the front door. It's not until he enters the mansion that the Black Knight senses anything amiss, and he's immediately attacked by Yellowjacket. He chases her right into an ambush by Mr. Hyde, who promptly knocks the Black Knight out. Hyde's all for killing him, but Yellowjacket reminds the crazed criminal that Zemo wants the Knight alive for now, to be used against the rest of the team. Hyde brings the Black Knight to the room where they have Jarvis tied up, with most of the Masters of Evil already gathered. The villains are giddy with success, but Zemo reminds them that the plan to destroy the Avengers has only just begun. Time passes, and we move to New Orleans, where Captain Marvel is chilling out over breakfast. Suddenly, she gets a distress call from the Wasp, asking her to go to the main assembly room at Avengers Mansion on the double. It doesn't take CM long to zip over there at light speed, but when she beams into the assembly room, she finds the unconscious Black Knight and the tied-up Jarvis. Jarvis tries to warn Captain Marvel that it's a trap, but there's no time, as Blackout was waiting for her. He encases her in Dark Force and then sends her to the Dark Force dimension, eliminating her from the playing field. Zemo comes in to gloat to Jarvis, explaining that they mimicked the Wasp's voice with technology to lure CM into the trap, and that's two Avengers down, three if you count the Submariner since he's on leave, leaving just three more to deal with. Zemo then goes to the command center for a status report from the Fixer and Yellowjacket. The Fixer reports that the Fantastic Four are out of the country, and he used the voice simulator to send the West Coast Avengers all the way to Indonesia. Zemo is thrilled and vows to continue to take the Avengers apart by tackling them one at a time. New Jersey, at the Wasp's estate, where she's relaxing poolside, no doubt worn out by her adventures the night before with Paladin. Suddenly, a helicopter appears over the pool and Captain America jumps out. Cap explains that he just beat the Trapster in Whirlwind, and when he called Avengers Mansion to report, he spoke with the Wasp, who blew him off. He thought that seemed unlike her and decided to check on her in person. Indeed, the Wasp confirms that he certainly didn't speak to her, so something is very wrong. They decide to investigate. Later, back at the mansion, the strong, stupid members of the Masters of Evil are taking great fun in ransacking the mansion, taking things that they think have value and destroying the rest. What our villains don't realize is that the Wasp has snuck into the mansion and is now watching everything. She soon finds Jarvis and the unconscious Black Knight, and Jarvis explains the situation to her. The Wasp intends to free them both, but Jarvis tells her that they don't have time. Hercules is about to walk into a trap, and she has to stop him. Hercules has been out carousing with one of Zemo's hirelings, a beautiful woman who gave Hercules a ton of drugged booze, and man is the Lion of Olympus feeling the effects. The Wasp and Captain America intercept Hercules before he goes into the mansion and take him to a nearby van to explain the situation. Unfortunately, once Hercules hears of the Masters of Evil, he doesn't react the way Wasp and Cap had hoped. Drunk and long resentful of the Wasp and her orders, he storms out of the van and walks right into the mansion, refusing to wait for reinforcements or a plan. He quickly encounters Tiger Shark, who starts wrestling with him. The Masters were somewhat unprepared, but rally quickly. Seeing Captain America and the Wasp heading for the mansion to back up Hercules, Zemo sends the Strongest to help fight Hercules, while the Fixer uses the upgrades he made to the mansion's defenses to capture Captain America. They almost get the Wasp as well, but she manages to escape, flying back out to the sidewalk outside the mansion's walls. Before the Wasp can head back to help her teammates, the entire mansion is surrounded by Dark Force. The Wasp tries to blast through it with her sting, but there's no effect. What of Hercules? He's dispatched Tiger Shark, but now Mr. Hyde and the Wrecking Crew arrive, and while he gives them a good fight, with the arrival of Goliath and still drunk, Hercules is in a bad spot. Goliath grabs Hercules by the legs and knocks him around a lot, and then all the villains just start pounding on him. Shortly afterward, Hercules is thrown out of the Dark Force surrounding the mansion at the feet of the Wasp and some policemen, and the Wasp can't find a pulse. To be continued. Our roster this issue is Black Knight, Captain Marvel, the Wasp, Captain America, and Hercules. We still have Jarvis around. And our villains are, again, the Masters of Evil, Baron Zemo, the Fixer, Yellowjacket, Mr. Hyde, Goliath, Piledriver, Thunderbolt, the Wrecker, Tiger Shark, Bulldozer, Moonstone, Blackout, and a new kind of member, a new character, the woman who takes Hercules out and gets him drunk. That is Black Mamba.
Oh, really?
Yep. Black Mamba first appeared in Marvel 2.
Wait, how do you know that it's Black Mamba?
Because her name is Tanya Seeley, And I knew that name, and I looked it up, and it's Black Mamba.
Was her name Tanya Seeley?
Mm-hmm. So in any case, that's Black Mamba. Black Mamba first appeared in Marvel 2-in-1 number 64. That was in June of 1980. She was given superhuman abilities by Roxxon Oil to help them in their quest to find the Serpent Crown. She joined the Serpent Squad and fought the Thing and Iron Man. And then when she was invited to join the Serpent Society, she did that as well. Her ability is an odd one. She has superpowers. She can scan people's minds to find who they love the most, and then she creates a dark force version of that person, which coils around them and constricts them and kills them.
That's vaguely snake-like, I guess.
It's very odd. All right, what do you got?
How does that help? That seems just like an awful thing to have.
With all the best intentions in the world, and I love the Serpent Society, I think it was difficult to figure out, like, 14 different snake powers.
We found more snakes. We need to do something. Black Mamba, I mean, that's a pretty well-known snake. You'd think you'd have something better than that.
I mean, the Dark Force constricts, so it's constricting.
Sure, yeah, I got that part. But so, if I'm just a guy, and I'm talking to this Tanya Seeley woman, and she somehow can sense the person that I love, and then she makes a shadow of them, and they strangle me?
Yes. You would look at it, and you'd be like, oh...
It doesn't have a face.
Scarlett Johansson. It's got a face. And you see it.
So, see, that doesn't make sense. How do you turn Dark Force into something that isn't just dark?
It's comic book logic.
So Hercules got the snot punched out of him.
He sure did.
I guess starting from the beginning here.
Good place.
So we see that from last issue that Black Knight was kind of miffed. I had mentioned it. The Paladin was there. And he doesn't see any use for himself sticking around because Wasp is just going to make googly eyes at Paladin. So he goes stomping home. I can't even. Is it nighttime? I can't even tell.
Yeah, we can't really tell.
No idea. The clue to him that something is wrong with the mansion is the fact that the lights are never turned off in the foyer. Well, that's just horrible. What a waste of energy.
Yeah, I don't really understand why they can't turn the lights off in the foyer.
I think I could live at the same place for years and years and years and never realize that the lights were always on in the room when I got home. I don't think it would click in my head. I'd just be like, oh. Like, if I came home one night and the light wasn't on, I don't think I would notice it. Or think there was something terribly wrong. This is odd. Do you?
Yeah, I think I'd notice.
Really? Just lights.
Yeah.
Like someone could have been passing through and turned them off and then didn't realize that they had turned them off.
Yeah, but Jason, no one turns the lights off in the foyer.
Ever.
I hope that now that the Masters people have the mansion, I was really hoping the Avengers would knock their way through a few walls to get back in. I do like the fact, though, that when Mr. Hyde ambushes the Black Knight, he does it by not punching his way through an internal wall. They're like, we may have captured the mansion without knocking through a wall, but gosh darn it, I'm knocking some walls down before I leave here. It's tradition. Yeah.
He punches his fist through the wall as the Black Knight's going by. How did he even know he was there?
I'm hoping that he took two little fingers and punched little eye holes in the wall. So he was standing there looking through.
That was the portrait of the Fantastic Four. It was one of the, and he was peeking through it. I do like the fact that they've managed to make just reading the Avengers, and if we're only reading the Avengers in a bubble and didn't know anything about it, they make Mr. Hyde into a very credible threat in this storyline.
He is terrifying.
He is really scary.
He always seems to be really out of control.
I think I mentioned this last issue. I like Roger Stern working in the little things between the villains to show that they don't all get along. We mentioned Zemo and Moonstone are suspicious of each other. And Yellow Jacket thinks that Fixer's a creep. I know you mentioned that she didn't really like the Wrecker either.
And she thinks that Mr. Hyde is a crazy psycho, which he is. And there's even little things here like pile drivers. Like, I'd like to see Goliath take Hyde down a peg. And Thunderbolt's like, just shut up. I don't want to hear about it. So yeah, there's a lot of little business. He's trying to give the villains personalities, which considering how many of them there are, I think he's doing a great job.
As the bad guys are smashing their way through the mansion, the Wrecking Crew finds Porcupine's old armor in a display case. I thought that was a nice little touch.
Yeah.
And along those lines, I think the most enjoyable thing for me about this storyline, at least at the beginning, is just the utter disregard that the bad guys have for the mansion. It's almost shocking as a comic reader to see them, you know, just smash through something that's so iconic.
We have made a lot of jokes in the past about knocking through the walls at Avengers Mansion, but they're not doing that. They're getting personal. They're destroying the things inside the mansion. You know, the walls can be rebuilt, and have been. You know, they're going after things that mean things to these people.
And they're ransacking stuff. They're trying to steal things that might be important. And
yeah.
And they're just destroying furniture for no reason. Right after the smash and grabs going on there, we see Wasp. She's kind of trying to recon and see what's going on in the mansion. And she goes to Jarvis and removes his gag so he can tell her what's going on. But we don't see her replace it.
Fair enough.
And I would think that that would be an important thing to show.
Because otherwise they'll know someone was in there.
Yeah,
because
I'm assuming the next time we see him, it's going to be back in place, which is fine. I just thought it would have been a nice little detail to show her putting it back, saying, hey, I got to put this back so they don't know I was here.
Yeah, you may be right. We don't see him again this issue.
We don't.
I'm trying to remember next episode to look for that.
Spoiler, it is. I already looked.
Oh, well, there you go then.
Which is even worse, though, because they should have done it in that issue. Because you'll go, you know, a month later and Jarvis is there with the thing and you don't think anything of it. Black Mamba was a good ad there. I do like the fact that Zemo paid someone to make sure Hercules got drunk and drugged.
Yeah.
It's a nice little detail.
And it's nice that it's a supervillain.
And, of course, all the little taking orders from a girl tidbits that have been planted over the past year or so have come to a convenient head here.
Yeah.
All makes sense. And it makes you wonder how far out Roger Stern was planning all these things.
Yeah.
If he was able to plant that. Like, even the fact that Moonstone and Blackout are both on the team when they had escaped from Project Pegasus, how many issues ago that was.
Yep.
It's kind of cool.
Yes, it is.
He mentioned that he sent the West Coast Avengers away to Indonesia. Do we see them in Indonesia in their next storyline?
No.
So
never mentioned in that title.
Never.
But that's fine. You know, I guess they needed to. I mean, I don't really know why they had to account for the. Well, they'll have to account for the West Coast Avengers eventually. But in this issue, they didn't really need to because no one's trying to contact them.
It makes you wonder when he says he wants to defeat the Avengers and then move on to the Fantastic Four. Does he include the West Coast Avengers in that?
No one cares about that.
Because he should. I mean, Hawkeye had been on the Avengers team. Was Hawkeye around when they fought Baron Zemo before?
No.
When he was killed?
Hawkeye joined the issue after he died. I don't think anyone really thinks the West Coast Avengers are a credible team. I don't know if you're aware of it, but Tigra's on that team.
They're like the Hollywood Avengers. No one takes them seriously. I do like that the Fixer tinkered with the mansion's defenses and created a device that would, instead of holding Cap outside like the original defenses did, it actually drags Cap into the mansion. And then the sonic cannons were nice. The Dark Force bubble. Every step of this plan so far has kind of been genius to this point. And then they eject Hercules. Why?
I believe Baron Zemo says it at some point in time, but if he doesn't, he may say it next issue. To sow fear.
Yeah.
To show that they could take the strongest Avenger and kill him or at least drive him to the point of death.
I know, yeah. He's doing it to show how powerful the group is, but isn't it... I think it would mean more to keep Hercules in there and, like, no one knows what's going on inside the building.
I agree with you, and this is you know, after...
You're, like, playing one of your cards here. Like, people are going to know, oh, okay, well, they beat Hercules up, so we know they have strong people. And then you're, like, giving something away.
After playing, or after praising last issue, and I will pretty much praise this issue as well, we're going to start to see some of the problems with Zemo's plan.
Some little cracks there.
My other crack this issue is that when Hercules comes barreling up to the front door... They're taken unawares. Zemo's like...
He comes through a wall.
How did Hercules get so close to us? You know, or how did he get so far into the mansion? And the Fixer's like, oh my God, look, more Avengers. And I'm like, Zemo, you knew what was going on. Tanya Seeley just called you and said she dropped Hercules off out front of the mansion. Why are you surprised?
And don't they have monitors? Can't they see all this happening?
It really bothered me. And it's unnecessary because their surprise means nothing. You know, no one is able to take advantage of it. It's very momentary. So why is it there?
And they recover so quickly anyway.
Yeah. So all it does is make Zemo look like an idiot because he should have known where Hercules was.
Yes and no, but it also makes them look more competent because they're able to recover so quickly.
Agree. It just bothered me because I'm like, you should never have been surprised in the first place.
Yeah. My last note here is that I remember reading this as a kid and almost being scared because you can't envision a way for the good guys to win at this point because they're so taken apart. And it always seemed so obvious before, like you never doubted that the heroes were going to prevail somehow. But here you're like, at every little turn, like something is taken away from them. And I never knew that Hercules could be beaten that badly. I always thought he was kind of just indestructible.
Zemo's a really good point on the last page, which makes you wonder how closely he's been watching this team for how long, because, you know, he's taunting Captain America, and he says, the only one of your members who's free is the Wasp. She's not a threat to me, and in fact, she's been really helpful, because the Black Knight's infatuation with her made him an easy target.
Hercules'
frustration with her made him an easy target, and she really has. Maybe she should join them.
They already have a yellow jacket. They don't need a Wasp.
That's a good point. There is no... did you have anything else?
No.
There's no bullpen bulletins.
There is now. We get extra action.
What about Mark's remarks?
Mark's remarks gives us a rundown of the no prize policy of all the other editors, and who cares?
I agree with you, though. I still prefer his column over the question of the month. But yeah, basically, he's asking the other editors, do you give no prizes? And if so, what do people have to do to get a no prize? And you know, it's funny.
I don't know why he's so obsessed with no prizes. Like, three of his columns so far have been about no prizes.
I have to believe he just gets a ton of letters asking for them. But it's funny because when I was a kid, I remember the No Prize Rules always were. Apparently, I only read Grunewald comics.
Right.
I always remember the No Prize Rules was you have to find a mistake and then explain it away so it's not a mistake anymore.
It wasn't until I started reading older back issues that I realized you could get one just for pointing out some dumb coloring error or misspelled word.
And some of them are very honest. I think Ralph Macchio is like, I'll give you no prize for anything. I don't care. Whatever. I mean, it's
not an actual prize.
He's like, you know, it's just a piece of paper, right? I just got to mail it an envelope.
I think it's actually just an empty envelope.
Yeah. MVP.
I'm going to say again that no one is doing a very good job here.
No, I picked the Wasp because she didn't get captured. But, I mean...
You are the best of the worst.
Yeah. Useless character.
Hercules. He's being a stubborn punching bag. It is not very helpful. Although I do have to consider Wasp and Captain America as well. It's not a great tactical plan to storm the place by walking up to the front door.
I picked the Black Knight because at least Hercules gets some punches in before he goes down.
Black Knight went up to the front door too.
Yeah, and
he didn't know any better. At least Wasp and Captain America knew what was going on.
He didn't know any better, and to be fair, he got punched by Hyde, but he went down like that.
Well, because he got punched by Hyde.
Agreed.
Through a wall, and it was still strong enough.
Best quote taken out of context.
You going to give us a hand with this jerk or what? I mean, out of context.
Nice. That's great. Final grade.
No. Avengers level threat.
Oh, Avengers level threat.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Final grade.
I gave it an A+.
Wow. A+.
Yes.
Why better than last issue?
Because it escalated the craziness. It took out a lot more people and made me feel hopeless.
Well, I still gave it an A. It's still a good... It's good stuff. Even with my little nitpick about things.
Yeah, I have some problems with it, but at the same time, I just think it's a really good story at this point.
So, wow, Jason, what are we going to talk about next episode?
On our next episode...
We're going to West Coast Avengers again, right?
Right. It looks like the threat here isn't going to just resolve itself and go away. Hopefully, there will still be some Avengers left to put up a fight. Tune in next week for the big finale.
And honestly, I know we don't usually talk about this, but this entire plotline can be bought as a trade paperback. It's called Under Siege. These really are some of the best Avengers issues out there. They're really good. I'd highly recommend it.
Yeah, and if you buy the trade paperback, you don't have to read the Marks for Marks columns. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to get in touch with us, our email address is mail@avengingHour.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram @AvengingHour. We have a Facebook page, and our website is AvengingHour.com. We will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.